Well, the area around Houghton Lake and Higgins Lake in Michigan's northern lower peninsula is renowned for its natural beauty and recreational opportunities. The woods and waterways of the Pere Marquette and Au Sable State Forests are a destination for many who enjoy the great outdoors here in Michigan. It's also a region acclaimed for an endangered yet beloved bird. 50 years ago, the Kirtland's warbler was in danger of extinction, but a series of conservation efforts is bringing the small bird back to healthier numbers. Current State's Kevin Lavery set off to find this striking bird in its unique forest habitat.
No one really knows how long the brilliant little yellow-breasted bird that Jared Kirtland first identified in 1851 has lived in Michigan. But the Michigan DNR's Keith Kintai can tell you when the Kirtland's warbler first showed up here. In this stretch of jackpine forest near the Crawford-Kalkaska County line, oil pump jacks chug along in diesel-powered perpetuity.
This became a dedicated Kirtland's warbler management area because of a wildfire.
The sparks that flew from a pipeline worker's welding torch touched off a blaze that consumed more than 4,200 acres. The smoke from the Fletcher Road fire could be seen 20 miles away.
It started to the south of where we're standing and burned to the northeast. There was jackpine here that burned. It receded after the fire, and Kirtland's warbler occupied this area in the 70s, and so we've continued to manage it.
Fire is key to the Kirtland's warbler's life cycle. This bird, which breeds almost exclusively in Michigan, seeks out young jackpines for bugs and berries. It nests on the ground in the shade of its branches. The Kirtland's warbler prefers short, young jackpines that are only a few years old. Taller, more mature trees are more susceptible to fire. U.S. Forest Service biologist Phil Huber says it's their very demise that triggers the creation of the warbler's habitat.
The species has what is called serotonous cones that are opened when heated by fire. And when a fire burns through a jackpine stand, those cones open, and over a period of weeks or months after the fire, the seeds disperse from the cones, and then literally millions of new seedlings start as a result of the fire burning through that area. So the fire scarifies the soil, removes all competing vegetation, new seed falls to the ground, and then we have new seedlings. And in about 6 to 8 years, we have habitat for Kirtland's warblers once again.
Phil Huber, Keith Kintai, and I have come to this site along Fletcher Road, where the 68 wildfire gave rise to today's wildlife. Joining us on our field trip is Chris Mensing. He's a biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Like me, Chris has driven 150 miles from East Lansing to spot a Kirtland's warbler. If that's going to happen at all, this is the place.
We have a lot of Kirtland's warblers, relatively. You know, we're still talking about a very rare species, only 2,300, 2,400 males in existence. So we're not talking about a large population. But where we've done the habitat management, we're finding the warblers show up pretty much anywhere where we're creating habitat.
But so far, we're not seeing or hearing them as we trudge through the sand that marks the outwash plains that are characteristic of this part of Michigan. It's a cool, cloudy morning with just a hint of drizzle. But the weather is not the determining factor for the solitude. Nesting season, the time when singing males are most vocal, is long over. Nesting is also the time when the Kirtland's warbler is most vulnerable to manipulation. Not by man, but by a fellow flyer, the cowbird. Again, Chris Mensing.
Cowbird is an obligate nest parasite. And what that means is a cowbird will not build a nest. It relies on other birds' nests to lay a cowbird egg in that host bird's nest, and the host birds will raise a cowbird chick as its own. Most birds have figured this out, and there's a balance that they've worked out just naturally, that some cowbird chicks survive, some host bird chicks survive, things go on. Unfortunately for Kirtland's warbler, they do not have any defenses against cowbird parasitism. So as a cowbird will lay its egg in a Kirtland's warbler nest, the Kirtland's warblers will raise the cowbird chick at the expense of its own.
Mensing takes us to a large steel cage in a clearing off the path. About 6 feet wide and roughly 8 feet tall, this is a cowbird trap. Cowbirds are very social, so conservation officials use live males and females as decoys to lure their peers into the cages, which are well stocked with food and water. Bensing says this is a humane way to give the Kirtland's warbler the peace and quiet it needs to take care of its own.
We trap lately about 1,500 to 2,000 cowbirds a year out of these areas, and it works. We've actually have some researchers from the Smithsonian doing, this is the second year of a 3-year study to look at what the effects of cowbird parasitism is in these areas when you remove the cowbird traps. And what we're finding out is that these traps work remarkably well. Parasitism rates are effectively zero.
Back on the sandy path, we've still had no luck. Chris Mensing has an idea, but he's a little reluctant to carry it out. He's got a recording of a Kirtland's warbler on his phone. Mensing says though it's an accessible way for bird watchers to spot their prize, it really should be done sparingly.
What you're doing is you're altering their natural behavior. It's taking their attention away from their feeding and then coming to look at you. And so we have concerns that, you know, at a large enough scale, that could be an issue, with, especially for some of these really critically endangered species that need all the help they can get.
Chris fires up his phone and waits for the reply. His chance pays off. Soon a male appears in front of us, partially concealed in the pines. The Kirtland's warbler is a species on its way back up. It's a success story in Michigan, a place that's learned the hard lessons of the 19th century lumber boom that nearly decimated the bird. In this century, the timber industry's improved harvesting techniques are vital to the warbler's survival. Today, loggers are partners, not predators. The Kirtland's warbler is most at home in a mix of dense forest and open spaces. For every acre of jack pine planted here, the U.S. Forest Service deliberately cleared 1/4-acre tracts it calls plantations. They've worked well, but biologist Phil Huber says foresters are now starting to turn to a more natural approach.
This was a way that we produced Kirtland warbler habitat in a very effective manner for the past 40 years. We're starting to look at moving away from this and trying to mimic Mother Nature better, looking at wildfires and how the jack pines are distributed within those wildfires, and then looking at different methods that we might employ to mimic those better rather than just creating these solid plantations. And then by doing that, we'll probably benefit a lot of other species as well, and not just the Kirtland's warbler.
As its recovery continues, the Kirtland's warbler remains a federally endangered species. Its resurgence is a point of pride for many Michiganders who feel it should supersede the American robin as the official state bird. An annual festival celebrates the Kirtland's warbler each June, and the official mascot of Kirtland Community College in Roscommon is the Firebird. Like the mythical phoenix, the Kirtland's warbler is rising from the ashes of near extinction. But its survival requires more than just the hard work of its champions in Michigan. The Kirtland's warbler spends its winters in the Bahamas, so it's up to local officials there to do just as much to protect its favorite tropical getaway far from the icy north that welcomes home its favorite firebird in the spring. For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.